You're listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 22.
Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell.
Today on the show, we welcome Dr. Terry Townsend. Terry is a consultant on commodity issues, especially those involving the cotton industry. He serves as the chair of the Discover Natural Fiber Initiative and is the coordinator of the steering committee of the International Task Force on Cotton Testing Methods. Welcome, Terry. It's good to talk to you today. How are you?
Hi, thank you, Elizabeth. I'm glad to be here and I'm fine. Thanks a lot.
Great. Before we start, Terry, we might need to clarify something. Obviously, this is the Wool Academy podcast, so the question arises why today's guest is an expert from the cotton industry. And, well, first of all, cotton and wool have a lot in common because they are both natural fibers, and this is something we will talk about on the show today. And second of all, I think it's always important to be learning from other fiber industries as well in order for the wool industry to also improve itself. And that's why I'm so happy to be able to be talking to Terry today. And now, Terry, before we dig deeper into the world of natural fibers, can you tell us a little bit more about your career and the work that you do today? Because I only gave a very brief introduction to yourself.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Elizabeth. Well, first of all, let me say I'm glad to be here, and I am fully in agreement that cotton and wool are companion fibers that have a lot to learn from each other, and I appreciate this opportunity. I spent 33 years working in the cotton industry. I was both a domestic cotton industry analyst here in the United States for several years, and then I worked for the International Cotton Advisory Committee. That's something like the IWTO, but a little bit different. It's a government body headquartered in Washington, D.C., and in that capacity, traveled around the world talking about cotton and meeting all segments of the cotton value chain. I was instrumental in supporting the International Year of Natural Fibers, 2009, and in that capacity, while I was still at ICAC, the International Cotton Advisory Committee. And at that time, I met your predecessor, Henrik Kuffman, and we began exchanging information and started collaborating a bit in the as part of the International Year. And then that followed on into the Discover Natural Fibers Initiative. And so toward the end of my career at Cotton, and I retired 3 years ago, and in my retirement, I've spent a lot more focus on natural fibers broadly, not just cotton. And so that is how you and I met, and how I end up here today.
Yes, great. No, and yeah, indeed, we did have very interesting meetings throughout that time when we both were at Discover Natural Fibers. But before we go into the natural fibers, can you give us a little bit of an introduction to the cotton industry? What do we need to know about cotton?
Well, first of all, cotton is big. Now, wool, of course, is big and important, and each kilogram of wool is worth about 6 or 7 times as much as cotton. But on a volume basis, cotton is the largest natural fiber. About 24 million metric tons of cotton are produced each year. Somewhere around 50 million households are involved in growing cotton. Most of those are in Asia. China, India, Pakistan are the biggest. But it's a lot of households. And when you count seasonal labor as well as year-round labor, when you include seasonal labor, around 200 million people are involved in some stage of cotton production each year. So it has a very large economic impact, especially in developing countries. Another aspect of cotton that has to be mentioned right at the front is that it's an industry that is facing a lot of stress. Probably as much stress this year or in these years as it faced during the Great Depression in the 1930s. Cotton consumption is about 10% lower today than it was 10 years ago. That's despite population and income growth. And the reason that it's under stress is polyester production. And in that sense, it shares a problem or a threat with wool. Wool is also facing a lot of competition from the man-made fiber complex. And so while the cotton industry is very large and involves hundreds of millions of people and has a great impact on the world economy, those just being large and important is no guarantee that cotton is going to survive as a major industry. Cotton has got to compete on both the matter, grounds of price and fiber performance characteristics if it's going to remain a large and important industry. And I look forward to talking about those factors as we go through this this discussion today.
Yeah, and you already mentioned that wool and cotton are the two biggest natural fibers, and obviously cotton is much bigger, as you just explained. What sort of relationship do wool and cotton have, and what do they have in common?
Economists call it a complementary relationship, meaning that the consumption of one benefits the other, as opposed to a competitive relationship where one offsets the other. So cotton and polyester, wool and polyester, wool and acrylic, those are competitive relationships. But all the natural fiber complex are complementary. As consumers learn more about natural fibers and as industry becomes comfortable with using natural fibers and develops the technologies to use natural fibers, consumption of all rise. And in that sense, wool and cotton are complementary industries. They're grown in different places. Obviously, sheep and cotton don't normally go together. Although there's some goat hair or mohair production associated with cotton, but not necessarily wool itself. So they're not complementary in the sense of being used in a crop rotation or being produced by the same people in the same places and that sort of thing. Certainly at the consumer level, all natural fibers must be supportive of each other, and natural fiber industries share the same common threats from man-made fiber production. I would add that cotton and wool also share a characteristic in that they're both under attack from environmentalists. I know the I'm not a wool expert like you are, Elizabeth, but I'm aware that environmentalists have criticized the wool industry for animal welfare issues. Cotton comes under a withering attack, excuse me, from environmentalists on issues of pesticide use and water use, and we can explore those more fully as we go along here today. But the characteristic that both industries share is that these attacks are based more on perception than reality. They often involve facts or pseudo-facts or fake facts, as we're becoming accustomed to those terms here in the United States.
Very popular term right now.
Yeah, that's right. And these, especially with the internet, these so-called facts get repeated, they get passed on, and they become embedded in consumers' consciousness that wool is associated with something negative, cotton is associated with something negative, and that is a perception that as part of a natural fiber complex, we cannot allow to go unchallenged. And the natural fiber industries must put out objective, fact-based, positive messages about the environmental and social impacts of our industries if we're going to overcome, if we're going to overcome some of these demand-side threats that we face in the marketplace.
Okay, thanks for giving this little analysis. And is another challenge that both cotton and wool have is the matter of land use, because in the wool industry we're often accused of using up too much land because sheep graze on big pastures. Is that also like how the land is used, and if it could be used for something else, like growing food, is that also a challenge for cotton?
That's an allegation that has been made for decades. It's I don't hear that one so much anymore because it has been so thoroughly refuted. All agricultural crops are grown in rotation with other crops. You can't, at least row crops or annual crops. The tree crops would be different, of course, but the any crop like cotton cannot be grown on the same land year after year after year without degrading that soil to the point that it simply won't support production any longer. And so, you know, farmers have known that since, you know, for thousands of years, since the ancient Sumerians have understood that they have to rotate crops. And so farmers are smart enough to, you know, they're not dummies. They know how to do that sort of thing. Cotton actually enhances food production when it's grown properly in rotation with crops. Cotton has a unique characteristic in that it has a taproot like a carrot. And so cotton will break up what's called a hard pan, and it goes down. Typically, the roots of a single cotton plant go down 1.5 to 2 meters. So they bring nutrients up from the subsoil level. They bring it up to the topsoil. And then when the cotton crop is harvested and the residue is mulched, incorporated into the soil, those nutrients are available for the succeeding crops that will follow cotton. Most common rotations are cotton with maize and soybeans, or cotton with wheat. And in smallholder agriculture, you also will graze goats on the crop residue. And that's why I was saying earlier, sometimes you have mohair production associated with cotton. And that's fairly small. I would add, again, I'm not trying to masquerade as a wool expert. Certainly would not have any knowledge base comparable to yours. But this allegation that sheep graze on large pastures that could otherwise be used for food, without even having to think about that very long, I realize sheep are grazing on that pasture because that's the highest and best use of that land. If farmers could earn more money by growing some other product on that land, a food crop, for instance, they would be doing it already.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, that allegation that grazing of sheep reduces food production because that land could be used more profitably in if they were devoted to food crop, obviously that doesn't make any sense. Again, there's Elizabeth, I don't want to be dismissive, but a lot of the allegations that are made against natural fiber industries, and not just cotton and wool, but also jute, sisal, rami, the other crops, a lot of these allegations are based on just an ignorance of agriculture. Again, I don't want to be dismissive, but these allegations come from people who assume that farmers must be dumb. That's the only explanation you can give for some of these allegations. That, and the land use issue is one example of that. If people believe that land has a higher and better use, more valuable use, if it were devoted to another crop, then farmers would do it, or ranchers would do it. I mean, it's self-evident. And yet people persist in this notion that somehow farmers are so poorly informed or are so ignorant or so helpless that they don't know their own self-interest and don't know enough to change land use patterns is simply fantastic. And I spend a lot of time in my career talking to people who have never been on a farm, or if they've been on a farm, it was part of a bus tour, some kind of a public relations stunt, and the closest they've come to commercial agriculture is they might have grown a tomato in a pot or something, And it's really very, very frustrating.
Yeah, no, we've had that before, that when I also talked to farmers on the show, that there's a big divide between people living in urban cities and not really being very disconnected to what's happening in agriculture. So I think it's very important to always make that clear, that that our farmers, it's their business, and obviously, like every business, they have to do their best in order to be a profitable business. Therefore, they do make very informed decisions.
Absolutely. I was saying earlier how large the cotton industry is, and that it involves perhaps about 50 million households. Before World War II, that number may have been double that level. 100 million households worldwide might have been involved in cotton production decades ago. And I suspect similar trends are occurring in wool and in the other natural fiber industries. As technology improves and as the economy expands and job opportunities are available off-farm, the number of households that remain in production agriculture has been in rapid decline. And we see that in countries like the United States, who've been growing cotton for more than 200 years, to countries like Bangladesh, who are more recent entrants into the world cotton industry. The economic pressure on natural fiber industries is intense. The competitive pressures brought by man-made fiber industries, the competitive pressures just within the value chain, the natural fiber value chain itself, as consumers are demanding products at ever lower cost. And so you've got low-priced retailers who are proliferating, and that puts downward pressure on the entire value chain. The economic pressures that producers of cotton and wool face are very intense. And only the farmers, only the producers who remain abreast of technology, who continue to adopt new technologies, who make best use of available resources, who are best able to minimize input use so as to reduce their cost structure, those are the only people who remain in business for very long. And farmers are constantly having to adjust, to adapt, to adopt in order to remain commercially viable. And people outside the industry who make sweeping judgments that farmers are doing this wrong or doing that wrong simply have no understanding of the kinds of pressures that these households face in their efforts to remain viable, to earn incomes, and to continue to earn a viable living from natural fiber production.
Yeah, maybe let's tackle that other prejudices that we have, that for sheep farms, but also for cotton, that we're like destroying the environment. But then again, it comes back to the farmers depend on the land and they depend on the sheep. And if those are not taken care of properly, they will not have a business in the long term.
Yeah. Again, to make that allegation, you'd have to think that farmers are dumb. I mean, why else or how else could you explain a pattern of resource abuse continuing for years? Obviously, those allegations cannot be valid. Cotton has been grown for thousands of years, and wool has been produced for thousands of years also. Cotton has been grown commercially in the United States since the 1790s. There are areas of the United States that have been in continuous cotton production. And again, I caution that by continuous, I don't mean the same land has been producing cotton year after year, but in rotations. There are cotton farms today that are still operating after 150 years of being owned within a single family and passed down generation to generation, and we have accurate land records. And cotton continues to be a viable crop in these lands. Yields are rising. Farmers continue to, as I say, adapt, adapt, and constantly adjust to new economic conditions. If the environment was being destroyed by either wool production or cotton production, we'd certainly have figured that out by now. Obviously, the environment is not being destroyed by these industries because these industries continue as viable economic engines of income and wealth creation. And the broad assertion that production agriculture, whether it's animal husbandry or crop production, whether this is inherently damaging to the environment and is broadly or not just a bad example here or a bad example there, but is broadly damaging the environment. Again, you have to just assume that farmers and people in rural areas are just simply ignorant, or else there's no other way you could explain that kind of behavior that you observe. And obviously, farmers are not ignorant. They're some of the most well-trained in developed countries. Anyway, they're some of the most well-trained, highly technical people we have. Most farmers have degrees in agronomy or physiology or agricultural engineering or plant science or chemistry. I'm sure that's true of wool producers as well. They also many times have degrees in marketing or economics or business management. So these are highly educated people, highly technical people. Even in developing countries, now certainly farmers don't usually have college degrees in China or India or Turkey or Bangladesh, but within the rural communities in which they operate and live, cotton farmers are usually the highest or have the highest level of technical proficiency of all farmers in the rural area, because cotton is naturally a complex crop to grow. It's a broadleaf annual crop and makes it fundamentally different from the grass crops such as maize or rice. And I suspect the same phenomenon is true for jute, for sisal, for wool, because these are inherently cash crops rather than food crops. It's inherently more complicated to raise these crops than it is the competing food crops. And as I think looking across the entire natural fiber complex, you're going to see that producers, people working in the value chains that are associated with natural fibers, tend to be some of the most innovative, technically proficient people that we have in society. And I think that that fundamental characteristic is often underappreciated by people who don't have the kind of day-to-day or actual hands-on experience working with agricultural producers that other people might have.
Okay, I think now we expressed a lot of love for farmers. So I remember attending a cotton conference in Bremen together with Peter Aykroyd, the president of IWTO. And Peter Aykroyd gave a presentation in a conference session that you were chairing. And he talked about why and how the wool became a niche fiber. And what was interesting for us back then was that the cotton industry was actually interested in this kind of story that wool went through. So why back then were you so interested in understanding the challenges that wool had, and what is ahead for the cotton industry?
Well, the interest in the wool industry is simply because cotton is facing the same kind of competitive pressures. Cotton is facing competition with man-made fibers, particularly polyester, as wool has faced. And cotton is losing market share rapidly in the apparel fiber complex. Cotton is under a lot of criticism from primarily environmentalists because of allegations of wasteful resource use. And that's another characteristic it shares with wool. And more broadly, all of the fiber industries, apparel fiber industries, are under pressure from big macroeconomic changes that are occurring in the world economy. People are spending a smaller proportion of their disposable income on clothing today than they did decades ago. Today, consumers are spending much more on travel, on other leisure pursuits like dining out, on electronic gadgets, everything from computers to watches and that sort of thing. And while incomes are rising and population is growing, which are positive developments, cotton and wool and other natural fibers are losing market share to man-made fibers, and apparel is losing as a share of consumer spending. And so cotton shares these pressures with the wool industry, and that's why there was and continues to be a great deal of interest in the history of the wool industry and responses or strategies that wool used. Cotton shares another characteristic in that it does have a industry-wide cotton promotion initiative. That initiative is called Cotton Incorporated. Wool had the the Wool Bureau, and you still have and efforts at promotion. So cotton is also interested in how wool promotion has worked, what has been effective, what things are, and by effective, I mean cost effective, and what strategies are make the most sense to pursue. You're asking what sort of challenges lie ahead for cotton. The biggest challenge that cotton has is polyester. Today, in round numbers, a pound of polyester fiber delivered to a textile mill is around 45 to 50 cents. And a pound of cotton fiber delivered to a textile mill is about 80 cents. And cotton must become more efficient in production so that prices can drop and farmers can still produce profitably. Cotton has got to improve many of the technical performance characteristics, ability to take up bright dyes, strength, length, other factors affecting spinning performance, if it is going to be able to maintain its position as a major apparel fiber. And so there's a lot of interest in the wool industry among people in cotton, and we continue to appreciate the lessons from wool as cotton tries to develop a viable strategy in response to these pressures.
Okay, thanks for sharing those insights. And earlier you already mentioned a few other natural fibers. Let's talk a little bit more about those natural fibers that maybe not everyone really knows. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of the natural fiber market?
Sure. Well, in addition to cotton and wool, the next largest in terms of quantity is jute. Jute, in round numbers, cotton accounts for about 24 million tons of fiber each year. Wool is about 1.2 million tons. But in value, wool is much greater per kilogram. Jute, in round numbers, between 3 and 4 million tons of jute are produced each year. Almost all of that is in Bangladesh and India. Jute is worth much less than wool, obviously, and much less than cotton, even about usually worth about 1/4 as much on a per pound basis. Nevertheless, it employs millions of people in Bangladesh and India. and is important in that respect. Another fiber that I suspect many listeners have never heard of is coir, spelled C-O-I-R. It is a roping fiber made from the husks of coconut. About 1 million tons of coir or coir, it's pronounced differently in different places, are produced each year, primarily in India. And although there is some coir production in the Philippines and Indonesia, Thailand, other tropical countries. As I said, it goes mainly into roping. It's very coarse fiber, but it's also very strong. And it has the advantage of having an abundant resource base because it comes from the husk of the coconut, and there's a lot of it that's available around the world. Other fibers of importance to apparel, there's flax fiber used for making linen. There's around 300,000 tons of that produced each year. A lot of that is in Europe. Silk is also obviously important, about 200,000 tons of silk produced each year. And then you begin to get into smaller fibers, abaca, for instance, other bast fibers, things like hemp and kanaf, kapok, rami. And there are other animal fibers, such as camel and rabbit and that sort of thing as well. Altogether, there are probably 30 natural fibers, both vegetable and animal origin, that are of commercial significance. You add them all up, it totals about 30 million tons a year. And the market value of that, again, prices can change from year to year, but in round numbers, the natural fiber complex at the farm level is worth about $50 billion a year. So these are, even though many of the smaller fibers are small in terms of the world economy, they're important to the people who grow them. And they remain important sources of income around the world.
Yes, indeed. Now tell me, obviously we already established that the synthetic fibers are kind of what is putting the natural fibers under pressure. And you mentioned earlier the International Year of Natural Fibers and then the organization that came out of it, the Discover Natural Fibers Initiative. Tell us a little bit more about that platform and why is it so important for natural fibers to connect with each other?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, one of the objectives of the International Year of Natural Fibers and the IYNF was endorsed by the General Assembly of the United Nations, and the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations was the implementing agency. That was in 2009, and one of the objectives of the International Year was to improve connectivity between natural fiber industries. Prior to the FAO taking the initiative and forming a steering committee for the International Year and bringing us together, most of us, frankly, had operated in isolation. Cotton people talked to cotton people, and wool people talked to wool people, and we did not have a lot of interaction. But the International Year served as a platform in which representatives of the different natural fiber industries got together, and we decided there was value in continued collaboration and communication, and so the DN. The Discover Natural Fiber Initiative, DNFI, was created in January 2010 at a meeting in Frankfurt, as it was opposite Heimtex. And the DNFI continues to operate. We're up now to about 50 members. Anyone with a interest in natural fibers is welcome to join. So that includes an organization like IWTO could be a member or is a member. It can be individuals. And so I am a member of DNFI as an individual. DNFI has no budget. There are no dues. We communicate by email and through the website. We meet once a year in Frankfurt, again, as part of Heim Textil. It just seems to be a natural or as good a place as any to meet, where many of us would be attending anyway. And the purpose of DNFI is simply one of communication. We exchange newsletters with each other. We exchange information, statistical information about production and consumption. And we publish those on the website. We provide a base of just a clearinghouse for information common to natural fiber industries. And I encourage everyone who's listening to this podcast to go to dnfi.org, look at the website, and see what kind of information is provided. I think you'll find it very interesting. We've preserved all of the information that was gathered by FAO for the International Year, and then we've been augmenting that information in the years since with additional data about natural fiber industries. And I would hope people would find it interesting in joining. And there's no dues, and there's no obligation to attend meetings or anything of that nature. But by joining, you then become part of this natural fiber community and part of the network of exchange that we've built up since 2009. I currently serve as chair. I'm in the second of my my two-year term. Elizabeth, you've been a past chair. Other people have chaired. It's a labor of love.
Indeed, yes.
And, I encourage people again. It's just a platform for exchange of information. It's not an agency that conducts projects. We do not fund programs. It's entirely a platform for people with an interest in natural fibers to exchange information with each other. And so anyone listening to this podcast who has an interest, I urge you to join, and certainly welcome you, would welcome your membership.
Yes, and we'll make sure to link to the DNFI website also in the show notes. And I encourage everyone to have a look, because it is really a big source of information on all different kinds of natural fibers. Also for students who might need to work on a research project, it's a very good point to start and dig deeper into the different natural fibers. Well, Terry, our time is up. Before we come to an end, what's the best way for people to connect with you and find out more about you?
Yeah, thank you, Elizabeth. Email is the best way. My address is Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, at cottonanalytics.com. And I have a website, cottonanalytics.com, in which I blog mostly about cotton, but I do also talk about natural fiber, broader natural fiber issues from time to time. And I'd be happy to hear from people. I'm retired. I retired from ICAC 3 years ago. In my retirement, I enjoy exchanging information, writing about natural fiber issues, particularly those involving government policies, because that's what I focused on during my career at ICAC, and just generally being aware of and being involved in different issues that are affecting the growth of natural fibers. So I'd be happy to hear from people.
Great. And also those contact details will be in the show notes. Excellent, Terry. Thank you so much for sharing all that that knowledge, all your long life experience and involvement in all these different fibers. Really was really amazing with what we could learn from you today. And I think even that it was a lot about cotton, I think everyone interested in wool has learned also something today.
I hope so.
Thanks, and I wish you all the best.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye, Elizabeth.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode with Terry Townsend. If you want to find out more about Terry, the cotton industry, and the Discover Natural Fibers initiative, please visit the show notes at elizabethvandelden.com/022. Once again, all information about Terry can be found at elizabethvandelden.com/022. We love that you're listening to this podcast. Make sure you also connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. See you there, and bye for now.